Welcome to the On Coaching Podcast. I am Steve Magnus, joined as always by my good friend and colleague, John Marcus. John, what's going on, my man?
Not much. Just hanging out in Missoula, Montana today. Getting ready for the Big Sky Championships tomorrow. And excited to get on this podcast and, you know, do what we do, which is give the people what they want.
You know, I'm excited because, you know, you showed me the view out your window, and it's snowy, icy craziness in Montana. I'm just thankful that when I was in the college coaching game, we didn't have that. Although we had snow one year, we did not run that well. I think we were in Kansas, and we had snow, and our kids were just like, I haven't seen snow before.
Hey, you never did Northeast cross country like I did. We had lots of this. This is familiar terrain to me. I actually got top, 25 all region at the Northeast Regional Cross Country Championships one year in this exact type of weather.
Well, there you go. So anyways, all right, we've got Snowy John, which is going to bring us to our topic today. Anxiety creep, how to fight back, take ownership and thrive in training and on race day. And I can imagine that if I was coaching at Houston and we arrived in those conditions and we're running outside, anxiety creep would have occurred.
1000%. Yes.
There's no doubt about it. So we're going to talk about that today. Before we get that, just a reminder. You know what's coming.
Join the SCAR program. If you haven't, I don't know what's wrong with you. Do it.
I don't know.
There's 700 plus coaches all around the world on this. This is awesome. And it's popping.
And, you know, I'm enjoying. I created a little Steve's Corner and just people just throw in questions. And I love it. I'm just like, this is the best thing on the internet. I get to nerd out and, like, you know, talk about things and, like, I don't have to, you know, I'm not judged by the answer. I can just spitball and talk coach and stuff. I had a great question on periodization models for beginners and advanced and athletes and how they differ. And it's just cool. So, you know, you're missing out on that. You're missing out on John and I's monthly Zoom talks. You're missing out on all the courses we offer, the latest biomechanics, the Tom Telez edition. You're just missing out on everything. I don't know what you're doing.
And you know what I like the most about Steve is the fact, like, you know, you can have Steve's Corner and it's just kind of like an updated version of Twitter, you know, versus with more in a line dialogue with people who are actually enrolled in the journey, who actually care, who actually really want to get better versus, you know, sometimes people who respond in comments trying to go, aha, gotcha. So that's the fun part, to see how this evolution of, like, connection tools have been created and how we've repurposed them in this day and age now to actually just get what people find the most value in, which is that coach's corner, fireside, coffee talk type dialogue. Like, I think when we spoke at the Missouri Coaches Clinic several years ago, a lot of attendees found it to be, you know, to this day, one of the favorite and best clinics they attended. Why? Not because of the presentations we give, but because Steve and I, like, essentially just talked afterwards for 3 hours in this hotel conference room with about 10, 15 other coaches, and really just got to the heart of issues that they were facing and confronting and different strategies to create solutions.
That's very true. I mean, that was a lot of fun, and that's what we're trying to create online. So if you haven't yet, check it out. You're missing out. All right, let's go into anxiety creep, and I'm going to turn it over to the guy in the college coaching business first. Is how do you see this manifest in your athletes?
It's very simple. I think, you know, in this day and age, we talk about anxiety and anxiety creep a lot. And first and foremost, you know, there's nothing wrong or bad about anxiety. We all have it. We all get it. We all experience it. But how I define anxiety creep is when you got a lot going on and you do not know what you need to do, nor do you have a plan on how to do it. And that's really, like, the most important thing, I think, to me, is just calibrating, saying, look, anxiety is a valid emotion. Everyone feels, even when they are in a situation that they are unfamiliar with. Good example, right? Coming to cross country meet where we've been running in sunny weather all year, and then all of a sudden it's, you know, 20s and snowing and windy and icy on the ground. Oh my gosh, oh my gosh, oh my gosh. I'm going to freak out, quote unquote, so to speak, as the kids say, or have anxiety about how am I actually going to accomplish this task, which is compete in these conditions. So we have to step back and just look at what are the known knowns, and then what are the known unknowns, and also what are the unknown unknowns. And when you start to like create a list and create an inventory and give language and give space to those areas, all of a sudden it starts to de-escalate, right? Because you just don't have as much anxiety or worry about the potential outcome in the future that might happen or might not happen that you're unsure about, because you started to just look at just a very basic inventory of what is happening and what's in control, and also the inverse, what is not happening and what is out of your control.
Yeah, I think you nailed two important points there. And I'm going to just reiterate, because I think it's spot on, is that A, like, anxiety is a valid emotion. Mm-hmm. It's part of being human. It's there for a reason. If we didn't have anxiety, we probably wouldn't have survived out on the savannah, mm-hmm. because like we would have gotten eaten by something, right? Right. Or not gotten enough food or whatever have you. Like, anxiety is a valid emotion to drive behavior. But at the same point, I think the other side of it is it's realizing that it's that uncertainty around it. It's uncertainty around what's going to occur. It's uncertainty around the future. And that's often that driver of the anxiety. And unfortunately, in today's day and age, I think why we see more of it is because the emotion or feeling or sensation of anxiety was essentially to kind of like nudge us towards taking some action against some concrete or real like experience or fear, right? We're not going to have enough food. Go collect food. There might be a lion or snake hidden in the bushes or jungle. Like, be careful, like maybe don't go in that direction, et cetera, et cetera. But in the modern world, is what happens is those emotions like are no longer, there's no longer some definitive kind of concrete thing around it, right? Mm-hmm. More of mm-hmm. our problems are uncertain, nebulous. You know, we have way too much going on and we can't kind of like predict things as well. And I think to that degree, what it gets back to is also what you said there, is it comes back to how do you deal with that, which is like, how do you wrap your head and mind around the things that you can control in this situation? And then accept that there are going to be things that you cannot control. And I think those two things go hand in hand here, is especially in racing, is there are elements that we can control: our effort, our preparation, you know, our warm-ups, our race tactics, like all of those things that we can have a hand in. And then there are elements that are just outside of our control. What other people are going to do, you know, the mm-hmm. race conditions, the weather, like all of these things that if we lock on to and, you know, get nervous, anxious about, etc., there's no clear-cut solution. Because if I'm anxious about, hey, it's the weather sucks, it's snowy outside, blah, 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 there's nothing I can do about the weather except for like go back to things I can control, which is preparation. So it really is balancing this control versus like the things that you can't, and getting to a degree where you can accept the things that you can't.
And that's, you know, I think important to call out too in athletes who are high achievers who want to achieve, right? So you also get achievement anxiety. And at the core of this, it at its most corrosive expression, it can be something that paralyzes us, right? It makes us go to inaction. We are overwhelmed. We don't know what to do, or we think this outcome or this pathway of action might result in, you know, a failure, so to speak, or a loss, or, you know, some kind of negative outcome, right? And I think that's also really important now in this day and age, is to remember that even though in sport we compete and we have an outcome, because we only compete for a finite period of time. It doesn't matter the game, doesn't matter the race, doesn't matter this. The competition happens always for a finite period of time. There's not necessarily a judgment associated with it, good or bad, right? But oftentimes we have are inundated and we are, you know, kind of just told that things are good and things are bad, and we accept them that way. Like a really simple example in the distance running world is when a coach yells splits at an athlete during a workout and then qualifies it with fast or slow. So what you're doing, right, let's say the target for a race work or a workout for a race preparation in, you know, repeat miles at race pace is 5 flat for the mile. And, you know, the coach is yelling splits and the first lap's 70. You know, 5, the second lap 76, the third lap 73, and the last lap 75. Well, as you go throughout that sequence of, you know, split reading and data feedback, which is essentially what that is every, you know, 400 meters on a track, if you also say the number and fast or slow or perfect or good or whatever, what you're doing is you're implicitly qualifying and judging their work on that rep. Unless you, you know, say, hey, look, it's really important that you stay even pace no matter what, because you got to learn the rhythm, this and that, da, 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 da. 1 or 2 seconds differential on a lap split is not a big deal. But I hear it all the time from coaches who will say fast or slow with that minute of a differential versus, yeah, if you're looking for a 5-second swing, okay, there's a little bit that's feedback that tells you that that person's pacing strategy or internal rhythm might not be calibrated that well. But then you got to say, is it the right time and space during the thorns of a difficult session to actually make that coaching adjustment? Or is it feedback and data you use to then later, you know, down the road, you know, in a small talk after the workout or a couple of days later, say, hey, how do we address this? Because I saw this wide variance and variability in your like paces during this session. And, you know, overall, that's not good or bad necessarily, but it'll be easier on you physically and emotionally if you're somewhere a little bit more around steady and consistent with, you know, a little less tolerance of pace fluctuation.
Yeah, you know, what that reminds me of, and the point you brought up on achievement anxiety, especially, is how things have changed a little bit. And this is why, like, we feel and experience more anxiety. If you look at kids, especially the data on anxiety through kids is through the roof. Kids and young adults, I should say, is, you know, when you and I, John, were competing, and we were competing at the beginning of the internet age, so we experienced a little of this, but you know, when we were competing, if you were lucky, you saw your results, you know, get thrown up on DieStat at some point, you know, if it was a large enough meet. And, you know, if not, often what happened is like, you know, the results came in the newspaper if you were lucky. I remember my freshman year, they had a cross country section that ran every couple weeks with a couple highlights. It wasn't overwhelming in terms of, you know, judgment, because like, it was really hard to find stuff. You go back years earlier and like only the top of the top, you could find who they were, the results, etc. So there was a little more gap between like our results and what others thought of them. And what I mean by others is people outside of like our team, community, coaches, etc. So our judgment camp point came from, well, what does our coach think? Like, what do our teammates think? Like, our immediate. But nowadays, with social media and results everywhere, et cetera, like that judgment has shifted elsewhere. Meaning, we can feel, even if it's not 100% accurate, but we can feel like we're always kind of judged.
Mm-hmm.
Social media, all that stuff goes into it. And what happens is that creates that threat to, like, our achievement, our competency, and that gets translated often in a threat to ourselves, which is like the anxiety is almost like existential. I'm not good enough. You know, I failed. It's not I lost this race. It's I'm a failure. And I think that makes it even tougher actually for this generation than prior generations, because like we didn't have to deal with that problem. And the thing that all the research and psychology work is clear on is that when we get into those threats to ourself, like we're feeling judged, like we're not getting that validation, it pushes us to avoid instead of approach, right?
Exactly.
Yep. It pushes us to, okay, how do I avoid this situation? How do I protect myself, right? How do I protect my self-esteem? And often that comes through what? Either not trying, or, you know, taking myself out of that spot, or not taking a risk where I see if I fail. And that's kind of where this anxiety comes from. And the example I like to use that often resonates with people is that if you remember back to often junior high, right, you had the cool kids, you go into PE class, and the cool kids didn't try at kickball or whatever have you. They just kind of, they were too cool for it, right? Mm-hmm. There is same in the classroom. They didn't want to answer the questions. Why? They're kind of too cool for it. Because like one of the reasons is if you get exposed and the cool kid sucks at kickball or dodgeball and gets his butt kicked by the nerd, like that takes him back down a notch. So the default state is to avoid. It's to say, I'm not going to put myself out there. Well, nowadays where we're all kind of judged, et cetera, social media, results everywhere, all that stuff, is it's kind of like we're the cool kid in the PE class. It's easier to avoid and say, I'm not going to try, because that at least doesn't expose me. And what we're trying to do as coaches is to fight back against that, right? We're trying to get people to take risks, to say, yes, that anxiety is real. I understand why you feel it. But like, instead of avoid, we need to approach. We need to take on the challenge. We need to see what's there. And that's a really difficult task, especially, again, not to sound like the old man, but in nowadays, with overwhelming like judgment and social media and all that that is out there.
And that's the thing, the critics, right, are so harsh nowadays because there's so many and it's so easy to critique. And yet it's often not like aligned or engaged criticism. The people not in the arena, we have to remember this, they don't know. They don't get a say. They really don't get to pass judgment, right? They can if they want. Everyone's free to have whatever opinion, but it's not an opinion of merit or validation or actual, you know, consequence. And I think that's the hardest part is with this anxiety creep that we are seeing and, you know, now experiencing a lot, is that we are framing things as perfectionists and saying, I have to be like this and I have to live up to this idealistic standard, versus seeing it as opportunity, right? And that's when you can approach. And so if every day is you treat every practice, every race, every, you know, opportunity like the Super Bowl, and you go in, you can then scale your life up in an amazing way, shape, or form. Tom Brady often talks about this in his speeches, you know, public speaking, is he started off as nobody and no nothing, right? And he only got like, say, 2 reps of practice, but he made the most out of the 2 reps he got in a practice. And then he got 4 reps in a practice and he made the most out of those 4 reps. He treated those 4 reps like it was the biggest deal in the world to him, because it was, that was his opportunity. You know, his opportunity was 4 reps. And people are sitting here, you know, complaining they don't have this gear or this thing or, you know, this media following a presence, blah, blah, blah. But it's like, if your mindset is, look, I get 4 reps in practice, in a 3-hour practice, to prove to my coaches that, you know, I deserve a little bit more of an opportunity, that I can handle the pressure, that I'm up for the task, I'm up for the challenge. Coaches will be sensitive to that and they'll give a little bit more and a little bit more. And sure enough, fast forward many years later, you got yourself a Tom Brady, right? And that's, the mindset is different. And we have to do our best not to, you know, devolve to the common mindset of the masses, even as coaches, saying this time's good, this, that's good, blah, blah, blah. And understanding like what we have when we race is opportunity. You have opportunity to change the trajectory of your life in some way, shape, or form, every time you get to compete. This is what athletes get that not a whole lot of the general population get, because there's very rarely an opportunity to change the trajectory of your life at your day job, day in and day out. But in sport, if you demonstrate ability and capacity and you're competitive, not meaning you always win, but you strive towards that. You take, you approach and you take actionable steps toward that, despite the conditions, despite the unknown outcome. People take notice of that. They want to be around that. They want to, you know, people will then start to level up, so to speak, in that type of environment where that's esteemed. And so us as coaches, besides, you know, directly putting a name and a face to athletes' anxieties and having them write it down and having them actually like codify to a certain degree what's giving them trouble and angst, we can also create a space at practice, going into races, about how to actually approach things and reframe it in a way that makes it much more approachable activity rather than avoidance activity.
Yeah, I think there's two, again, I couldn't agree more. I think there's two important things you called out there. It's one versus, you called it perfectionism versus opportunity. I'd add perfectionism versus like being disciplined is too often we confuse the two. And when we try to be kind of crazy perfectionism, all it does is create anxiety around things. Tons of data on this and research on this. Because we stop trying to approach or take on the challenge because it's like a desire, it's a journey, it's an opportunity to do so. And we start being a perfectionist out of like the fear of like not being perfect. And it's the anxiety that drives it. And that's really important because like that distinction often when you're young, you think, oh, I'm going to be a perfectionist. This is the way to get to the top. And it's like, no, there's a very important distinction between like being very disciplined and taking advantage of the opportunities and being a perfectionist and letting the anxiety drive. And then I think the other point that is often missed here is that environmental point. Mm-hmm. Is if you create the environment that supports like taking on challenges, taking risks, like putting yourself out there and like potentially failing and bouncing back, like it doesn't eliminate the anxiety, but what it does is it allows you to like utilize and harness it and not like go to that avoidance mode. And I think far too often what we do is we think, oh, a performance environment is one that is like, you know, hard nose, crazy expectations, like do or die, et cetera. Instead of realizing, no, a performance environment, yes, you have expectations. Yes, you have discipline. Yes, you have all these things. But it's one that allows you to take risks and see how good you can be. Mm, yeah. It's one that allows you to see where your potential lies and see what we can do about that. And often we shoot ourselves in the foot on creating these environments because what do? Someone fails, and you kind of talked around this. Someone fails and, you know, immediately after or someone has a bad race, immediately after the race, we go in and light into them or critique them to death on whatever it is. What does that do? It kind of sends this message like, oh, you had a bad race. I'm going to light into you or yell at you or whatever it is. Like, you didn't try hard enough. All that does is the next time that athlete lines up, it's like, okay, I'm not going to take that big of a risk. I'm going to play it safe because like, I don't want to get scolded. You see this with, again, not to lament it too much or call it out too much, but like you sport parent, right? Often the parent on the sideline who is yelling and screaming has the kid who might be talented, but is so playing so safe and protective because they know if they screw up, like mom or dad or whoever is going to light into them on the sideline and they don't want mom or dad to do it. So they play protective or they play out of fear. I think for us as coaches, it's how do we create that environment where it's like, okay, I want you to take risks. I want you to take on challenges. I want you to be able to put it out there and potentially fail, but then have the wherewithal to understand, hey, let's learn and grow from this.
Yeah. In Buddhism, right? You know, they have a thing on mindfulness where you are still and you just be still. And what that means, a still mind, is you examine the thoughts that come in and emotions that manifest, but you don't necessarily identify with them. You take a pause and you say, should I, can I, do I want to identify with this emotion or this thought? Is it helpful? Is it useful? Is it something that will, you know, deliver a desired outcome of sorts? Or is it just any thought and every thought that pops into my brain, I validate 100% as this is me, this is what it's about, this is who I am. And the thing is with thoughts and emotions, right, is they're highly variable. So they kind of like pass in and pass out. You know, there's a lot of different analogies Buddhists use, but it's that taking that half second to pause and examine the thought emotion and deconstruct where it's coming from. And then this is the most important thing, making the choice whether to validate and act on it or to just simply discard it. And what happens is, what I see is a lot of young people, they get upset at themselves or mad at themselves or frustrated with themselves or disappointed when they have a thought or emotion that they don't think, quote unquote, they should have, or that's weak or this or that. And it's like, no, man, they come and they go. I really have no idea why some thoughts pop up into my head. But do I act on them? Never, right? If they're corrosive and not helpful. But that's the thing. It's just understanding this part of the human experience and the human journey. And what makes us, you know, really complex and amazing creatures is that fast, rapid amount of thoughts and emotions that can pop up and identify in our consciousness. But then the mature step, the enlightened step, the step that will give you calm and more peace is deciding whether it's valid to act on it or not.
Yeah, you know, I think one of the most important things that you can do is understand that, like, you're not your thoughts and emotions.
No.
Right? It is, I think far too often what occurs is we sit here and we say, okay, I feel this or I feel this, so it must be true. But you're right. What Buddhism gets at is like, no, we have the power to kind of acknowledge and decide, like, is this a accurate representation? Is this a thought or feeling I should listen to? Or should I let it float on by, or, you know, use any other regulation styles or strategies? And I think this is one of the most powerful things. So when we look at that feeling of anxiety or often, you know, the crazy thoughts that come with it. I think there was a study that I read a couple of years ago that showed something like, you know, 90% of people have like what they call obtrusive thoughts, which is like crazy thoughts that pop into your head. And, you know, like, I don't know, the example I might give is you're driving a car and the thought of like, oh, what happens if I turn the wheel and into the traffic comes in your head. Mm-hmm. 90-something% of people have that. Why? Because it's like how our brains kind of evolved is like sometimes like underneath the surface is we're often looking for dangers and things to watch out for. And sometimes some of those pop into our consciousness, right? It's the same with feelings and uncertainty and stress, anxiety is like, it makes sense that like, you feel and experience and even think these things at some point. But the reality is you get to choose to a large degree how you deal with them. Like, do you accept it? Do you reframe it? Do you let it float on by? Like, do you validate that experience and emotion and feeling or not? And that is up to us. And the better we are at training that ability, the better off we're going to be at handling, you know, in this case, that anxiety that comes with racing, training, and performing.
Yeah, that's, you know, a good call out, Steve. And I think we as coaches need to understand, you know, different coping strategies that we can implement when an athlete is expressing anxiety, whether it's race day, workout, practice, what have you. You know, when it pops up and manifests and comes to a head, it's very real and very potent. And a lot of times, you know, what I found coming back and working with the college student athletes is, it manifests in like rapid breathing, shortness of breath, like just eyes wide, you know, a lot of adrenaline in the system, but it comes from a space, at least my experience recently, of these young men and women being overwhelmed and overwhelmed by a variety of compounding tasks, deadlines, deliverables that they feel like they have to do, and then they don't have the space to do. So a good example is very tangible. I was working with a young lady a couple weeks ago at the track, and you know, she was in good spirits and sorts the day before, week before. We're going through our normal, you know, wickets and agility ladder warm-up series, and she just looked off and looked funky, and just it was just wasn't in her right state of being. She was a negative attitude. She's very usually a very chipper and bright person. And so I go up into her, ask her, I say, hey, what's going on? And she goes, Coach, I just, you know, all these things. And you could just tell something, a lot of things had manifested and come to a head in her world. And I asked, well, what is the thing that is giving you the most angst right now? And she said, oh, this math assignment that's due at 1 p.m. today that I've only had, you know, I only have 20% done, and I only have an hour after practice to get it done by this deadline. I go, all right, stop practice, go home and finish the math assignment. Here's an extra 2 hours. I go, do you think 2 extra hours will be able, you'll be able to get this math assignment done? She's like, yeah, okay, great. Boom, we stopped. She didn't practice that day, missed a workout. Oh no, whoa, is me. But the more important thing was to give her that space to get the biggest thing on her plate tackled and accomplished before this like pending deadline. So that would de-escalate the rest of her day and the rest of her life. And then sure enough, you know, she was able to like get it done, deliver on that, and get everything else she needed to get done. And then she came back the next day in just a lot better spirits, just about life and the world. So as a coach, right, you have a decision. Is this workout at 25%, you know, of their reserves, mental and emotional reserves, accomplishing that more important or just as important or effective than you know, dampening or putting out the anxiety or the feeling of overwhelmness for this young person in that moment? And I think a lot of times people choose to do the workout, but you know what? There's so many workouts in a year. There's so many workouts in a season and, you know, a career. Missing one here and there to like take care of business, so to speak, and to give that person that space and alleviation of anxiety, to me, I'll take that every time because it's just, it's the more sustainable path forward. And then you can have a debrief conversation afterwards about time management and better doing like, hey, how'd you get to this place where you didn't have this math homework assignment done before practice that was due an hour after practice? And then talk about strategies to then better ensure that you don't come to that tipping point or very rarely come to that tipping point ever again. That's a different conversation that you had maybe a week later, but in the moment you have to address the fire and put out the fire.
Yeah. You know, I love that story because I think it's a simple demonstration of like the small things that we can do to create an environment that can often, again, the controllable things lessen the load, you know, or anxiety in some places, which often like allows us to come back and perform. I mean, two things come to mind. It's why when I was coaching at Houston, we had a pretty standard policy, which is like, hey, if you've got like some major test or something driving you nuts and like missing a run or a workout is like legitimate and going to help in that regard, like you just have to talk to me and let me know. And you know, some coaches or people might say, oh my gosh, that's going to be abused. Like kids are going to take advantage of it and blah, blah, blah. And no one really did, right? And the few, very few exceptions of people who did like weren't, didn't last very long on the team anyways.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yes.
Because like there, it wasn't, that wasn't the only thing like it. And it's not like I just said, okay, you miss practice, you're done. It became pretty aware over time. It's like, okay, your attention is elsewhere and that's fine. And we'd have that conversation. They'd agree, you know? But for 99% of the kids, it was like, okay, I'm going to use this when I really need it. And I think that that environment, like again, and helps take that load off and also creates an environment of like trust where we can talk about things that are like driving us a little nuts or like making our life, you know, tough. And it also reminds me of the research that shows that essentially if you look at anxiety or stress outside of sport, it ties into performance and then the rate of injuries in the sport. So if you're super stressed and anxious, not getting sleep, etc., like research on various college sports has shown that like kids don't adapt to the training as well. Why? Because stress is stress. So if I've got this external stress and adding it on to the stress of the workouts, we're not going to adapt as much. And then B, like, we're more susceptible to like injuries and overtraining and all that, which again makes sense because like stress is stress, like holistically. So if I have smaller bandwidth to recover and adapt from, like, of course, that's going to make it more me more susceptible to injuries, et cetera. And there's actually a study that I came across last week that showed that, you know, I think it was around looking at finals time and how athletes adapt to workouts less during finals time.
Oh, 100%.
Why? Well, it makes sense. Finals are stressful. Right. So as a coach, you've got to take these into consideration.
Yeah. It's funny that you talk about it. I was just talking with our strength and conditioning coach here at Portland State last week about, you know, the lifting program and package and plan for after Thanksgiving break. And, you know, it's like, we look at it and, you know, you come back after Thanksgiving break and then that week at following for us on our class schedule is dead week. And then it's finals week. And, you know, he's like, oh yeah, I want to do this. And I go, dude, just give them the simplest things possible that you're okay with. Maybe at best they like do twice a week. They lift twice a week during this time. Like, anything like that would be amazing if that happened. Anything more than that, like our regular lifting regime of like 3 to 4 times a week in the gym, you know, working on like mobility and all the other stuff we do with that time in that space, like it's out the window. It's just not realistic. It's going to happen. Same thing with like, you know, my training, right? I'm like, all right, we're like taking time off or in maintenance mode because I know you're just adding something else onto young student athletes' plate. In a time when, or a period when their time is super, super limited, they're already stressed out and they have a lot of deliverables to attend to. So why even try to make that ask? It's just unrealistic, you know?
Yeah, exactly. It's kind of being realistic in the expectations and setting those clear expectations. And I think the old school model of just kind of like toughening out and not acknowledging reality just ends up backfiring. So it's about creating that space. And I think, you know, the other thing, and this is why we kind of tied it anxiety creep too, is that like, it's the stuff outside of sport that comes inside that often makes it really freaking difficult.
Yeah.
And if we can minimize that or adjust for that or adapt to that, it makes it where the stuff within the sport that already sucks and causes anxiety is easier to kind of control or manage because like it doesn't push us over that threshold from like, you know, anxiety to, you know, overwhelming spiral.
Yeah. And that's the thing, right? Any kind of athlete we work with, it doesn't matter what it's, you know, scholastic athletes, club athletes, professional athletes, what have you, what you as a coach need to do. And I think to help, you know, mitigate as best as possible these kind of injections of anxiety along the year for your athlete is understand that athlete's life rhythm. Understand when they might have really stressful, high demand times outside of sport. So whether that's in the classroom, whether it's at work, what have you. Oh, I got this big presentation that I'm presenting at the end of the quarter to the region and the regional manager, what have you. It's like, okay, great, understood. Hey, yeah, you know what? It kind of sucks that this presentation falls 2 weeks before this A race that you're trying to, you know, peak for, get a qualifier for, whatever. But that's reality, right? So you have to adjust and manifest because if you just copy and paste, so to speak, a training plan and a sequence of a buildup onto a calendar without considering the life rhythm of the athlete in the person's calendar that you are transplanting this upon, there will be issues. there will be difficulty. It will not go well. So that dig and learn opportunity at the start of any season or training plan or periodization scheme for the athlete population you work with is super vital, important to ensure you can get the most effective amount of training, accomplished and get them as much as, like our good friend Alan Bishop says, as compliant as possible with what's asked of them. But understand too, like if you don't take the time to really, really dial in and understand the nuance and sensitivity of their schedule, you can write the most eloquent and beautiful training plan in the world, but reality will make it so that it's just they cannot be compliant maybe at a certain space and time given if they have finals or this big test or they're traveling for this presentation or prepping for it or what have you.
Yeah, I mean, it really is just kind of like living in reality and understanding that and taking that kind of burden off of, you know, them. Because I think, again, tying it back to what we talked about earlier is also anxiety comes from misguided expectations. Mm-hmm. And I think because we live in a global world where we feel like we're competing against everybody in the world, against in everything, again, partially due to social media, what that does is it creates misguided expectations. And our job as a coach is to create clarity. And if we can create clarity around those expectations, both within what we're doing and outside of the world, because coaches, I think we have a lot of influence on this, we're going to have people who are in a much better space to handle things and thrive versus just kind of surviving.
Yeah, I think, you know, the main thing is just to know the timelines that you're wanting to be judged upon, right? Again, I'll just give another personal example here. Having taken over this Portland State program, right, 3 months in now, 3 months, it'd be very easy for me to compare myself to like Mike in Northern Arizona because, you know, he's a good friend of mine. We're competitive. We have fun with it. You know, we want to go there and have our athletes compete at a high level against each other because that's just, for us, it's a good time, right? But we're not there. The roster I inherit is not there. And that's okay. There's nothing bad about that at all. Like, it's fine. It's just a longer time horizon. You know, so judge me in 4 years, right? After I've had 4 years of recruiting, 4 years of development, 4 years of getting, you know, this program to operate in a way that to me is streamlined and fluent and at a really high professional level. But if you, you know, go on any kind of Let's Run message board, right, or wherever people tell me and talking trash about it, it's like, bro, like, you know, it's impossible to turn water into wine in 3 short months. It's not like, you know, you had an amazing, robust roster to work with and just walked into. It was a different situation. And that's okay. That's the journey I signed up for. I said, hey, you know what? This is going to be a fun journey. And that's where I'm on with every student athlete on this roster and who are recruiting and my coaching staff. And it's an exciting journey, but it's not like, oh, if we don't go out and win the Big Sky Championship cross country race tomorrow, I'm an abject total failure because it should be from 0 to 100 miles an hour in 3 months. It's just not realistic. And that's the thing is we want to always take the next logical step and always think about when we're dealing with athletes, walking the streets that they walk, like putting ourselves in their shoes, framing it in their terms. And we think about it in those simple qualifying ways, we individually or collectively can achieve amazing things, provided that, you know, we understand truly, truly, truly it's a journey and that there is no final destination. That's always kind of in flux, if you will, and very fluent. And you're going to win some, you're going to lose some, but the most important thing is like you keep playing the game. I remember I talked a lot about this to my professional athletes when I was coaching High Performance West back in the day. And Steve, as you know, part of being a professional athlete is the, you know, ability to keep being a professional athlete. And how do you do that? Well, you got to win things. You got to run times. You got to make teams. You got to, you know, the money has to keep coming in. So it's not necessarily about, oh, who made the Olympic team this year or who ran this really, really fast 800 meter time this 1 year, right? It's about the ability to keep playing the game year in and year out. And we can think about this very simply, like the two career trajectories of, say, a Boris Berian, if people remember that name, and then also an Ajay Wilson, right? Boris came on the scene out of nowhere, lit the world on fire, ran a really fast time, you know, rags to riches, like mediocre rise, right? Well, but then he kind of fizzled out because he had an inability to keep playing the game at a high level. Ajay Wilson, on the other hand, right? She's played that game year in and year out. And it's like almost kind of weird now that in the US, the 800 meter women is not dominated and always being won by Ajay Wilson because now her career is starting to sunset in that regard. But she's still in it and mixing it up. And it's been years, multiple Olympic cycles. So when you have that journey mindset, hey, I just want to keep playing the game at this level versus I got to hit a home run or else, so I got to, you know, do this magic thing or else, it kind of like de-escalates that anxiety to a certain degree, and you can take it in stride and in perspective.
Yeah, it really comes down to, I think, like how you're defining success and progress, and like that, right? Is it that one-off hit the home run? Is it part of the journey? Is it I'm defining success in a realistic way versus, you know, coming into some program and saying, I'm going to win a national championship right away or what have you. And I faced this at Houston. You know, I came in understanding, and actually my coach was, or my boss, Leroy Burrell, was really good at defining this. He said, Steve, you know, here's the reality of it. Like, you're not going to have, like, you know, a national championship cross country team. Like, our goal is to win a national championship on the track. And to do that, like, we have X, Y, and Z plan. But he said, and I remember this, he said, he was like, I see no reason why we can't have, like, success in certain areas and have, like, you know, one-off, you know, I remember he said, I have no reason why we can't get a sub four minute miler out of this. He's just like, we're not going to have five of them, you know? And it was like, if we get someone, like, I'll give you the spot and the resources to develop it. And I appreciate that, because it's like, again, like, what's the realistic, what's the goal? And I, as an assistant coach, like, and you're in a different spot leading a program, but I had to fit in the vision of what we're trying to do holistically as a coaching staff and team, not my individual, you know, whatever have you. And like, that was helpful. And then I had to define that for the athletes I had to, without coming across as like, oh, we're not going to try, blah, blah, blah. But it's putting it in perspective of what we're trying to get done. And I think, again, that comes down to defining success in that path, in that progress, in that journey, in a way that is resonant and authentic to the environment you encounter or are a part of.
100%. And, you know, I know, like, that was tough for you going from being a professional high-performance coach where you're like, all right, the posture was, let's try to win global medals with our athletes. And, you know, the bare minimum standard of excellence was making the world team for your respective country, to like, oh, Leroy being like, yeah, hey, this is just what it is. But you took advantage of it, right? You capitalized, like, you got Brian Braza. Like, there you go, right? Leroy said, this is doable, and you delivered. And I think that's the most important thing, is being realistic with the timeline of development and understanding that normal people can do amazing things, but it's just, how long is that really going to take to develop? And that's where anxiety comes into play too, is the one of the, you know, most corrosive things about anxiety that I've found is, it's like, you all, like, that is here, is it all has to be figured out. It all has to be perfect right now, today. That is mission impossible, right? Like, you have to be, you know, at this level of competitive excellence, you have to have this posture and pose, and, you know, on Instagram, you have to have this, you know, and that, and it's getting a little bit more overwhelming because the tools aren't in place for athletes to understand, like, no, you see those social media accounts, right, that look like this person is just casually taking photos here or there, or just in that, in a day in the life. No, we all know now that's a highly architectured environment with, you know, a small army of people taking videos and photos and, you know, manifesting that. And yeah, sure, it looks really cool, just as a TV show or movie looks really cool, but it's not reality. Right? The TV shows and movies are not reality. What you see on most kind of really manicured Instagram accounts or TikToks, right? Not reality. This is altered reality. And when we step back into the real world and we understand the real world's messy and, you know, icky and dirty, and there's ups and downs, and it's not as like fluid and streamlined as a thing as it seems. It's understanding that standard is not a standard to hold yourself to. It's more an aspirational standard, an idealistic standard, but in the reality of it, things are a little bit grimy. One of my favorite, almost my favorite stories, right, are say East African athletes who, you know, go and travel and get all these delays and have to sleep in airports and don't shake out run for 3 days before a race and then go and win some international marathon. And it happens more often than not, right? but they're not like, oh, everything was perfect with my travel. It's like the worst travel experience in the world. I slept on the floor of this, you know, airport, and yet they still show up and deliver. That is what we want to esteem. That is like, that's what it's all about, to me, at least.
Yeah, no, it's funny. It reminds me of actually, Brian, you mentioned him, but his freshman year, I remember we went out to US Juniors to try and make the world junior team in the 5K over a bunch of guys who were way better in high school than he was. And our flight, we were flying, you know, Eugene, it was in Eugene, so crazy hard to get to, as everybody knows. Yep. But we were going to, like, I think flying to San Francisco and then into Eugene. Well, while we're on the plane to San Francisco, our flight gets canceled to Eugene. So literally what was supposed to be, I don't know, a 5-6 hour trip turned into something like a, you know, 18-19 hour trip. With Brian and I, and there was one other athlete, a hurdler, who we took up there, which it culminated in us eventually getting into Portland, driving 2 hours, like getting in super late and then racing and the next day. And he made the world junior team off of that. And I think those experiences is, like you said, is like, yeah, they suck sometimes, but like that's part of like going through and understanding that, like, hey, it's going to be okay. I don't need to, tying it back to what we said earlier, that have every bit of this perfect to be able to perform. And that understanding lightens that load and lets you realize that, like, I have the resources to take on challenging things, even if it's, you know, not perfect.
And I think that's a big thing too, we as coaches can call out and keep identifying and also keep reinforcing and word indeed, is imperfect's okay, and imperfect's actually part of the human experience and condition. And imperfect is reality, and the reality you will be living in and have to do work in. And that's, I think, the most vital thing with distance runners as well, is understanding, like, I only expect athletes I coach to be able to do, you know, 80% of the training that I write down on the piece of paper cumulatively, week in and week out throughout the course of a season, right? Because it's written in a perfect scenario, in a perfect world. And I am a good guesser, but by no means like an expert at it. And sometimes things happen, right? People have panic attacks mid-workout because they have way too much on their plate and they feel overwhelmed. Sometimes people get sick. Sometimes people, you know, have a little hamstring thing that's just, hey, we don't want to like do all that too much with it, right? And that's really, at the end of the day, we talk about performance, we talk about outcomes, we talk about results. But what sport at its heart is designed to do is expose us to the unknown, and expose us to adversity, and expose us to challenge, and then give us a space and opportunity to approach it and respond to it rather than avoid it and run away from it. And that's it. That's the mission, ladies and gentlemen. Like, that's all it really is. And yeah, we can talk about stats and this and that and blah, 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 blah. But that's it. That's why I'm so thankful to be back in this, in a professional environment as a collegiate coach again, where it's like, cool, I get to wear sweats to work every single day, and I'm a professional at the highest level in the land at what I do. This is awesome. I love this 100%. Cool. We get to drive 8 hours, you know, from Portland to Missoula, Montana, and go from nice weather to 20 degrees and wind chill and crap. And you know what? Like, hang out basically in the hotels all day until their shakeout run and race day. And go give it the old college try, because that's it. That's the life experience these student athletes and athletes will get. And then it carries forward to other moments in the journey of life that are greater for them down the road. And we can't forget it, right? It's not, this isn't college football or basketball where there's millions of bazillions of dollars on the line and it's everyone's getting paid, you know, absurd amount of dollars and this and that. This is running, this is sport. And for most of us, it is about development of the holistic person and meeting those challenges head on in a safe space called a race or a game versus the end all be all. And if we don't do this, it's World War III tomorrow.
You know, I love the summary that you just gave there on this is what sport's all about. Because it's like those life lessons are what we're trying to develop. And I got to say, the most satisfying part of the job and even being out of it makes me miss it a little bit is like, you know, years later, and this happened a couple weeks ago, I get a text from someone and they're saying, you know, me and my other teammate were talking about this and this conversation and thing that happened, you know, years ago and how thankful we are, like, and how it applies like right now. And I'm like, that's it. Like that's the goal. You're preparing people. So I couldn't have said it better, John. I think that is what it is. And especially around this topic is we can either prepare them to take on life and, you know, have the tools to succeed and grow and develop, or we can prepare them to avoid shutdown, et cetera, have wrong expectations. And, you know, if you're a high school or college coach, especially, you play a big role in that. So do your best job too. And what I would add is if you need support while doing that, you know, the best way to find it, go to the scholar program, talk to 700 other coaches who go through crazy stuff with teenagers, young adults, helping them develop and grow. Promise you're going to find community there that will help you navigate these things. I go to people in the scholar program to help with certain athletes that I've had in the past because it's tricky dealing with humans and we all need help doing it.
Yeah. I mean, there's no quote unquote right way to do it. There's just different solutions at different times. I mean, I'm thankful to have Steve and, you know, Mike and Danny, just people I can call up and, you know, whether I have a little bitch session and just like vent out frustrations and then recalibrate, go, okay, got that out of the way. How are we actually going to solve this in a productive fashion that's going to empower and better those who we guide and who we coach? And, you know, if you don't have that or if you want to hear different voices on how to approach that, that's where, you know, forking over the heady dollar and small change a day to be a part of the scholar program and have access to the clubhouse community as well as the courses can go a long way. Just to, again, make you feel like you're not an island onto yourself and being the only person in Crazy Town, as I call it, but also too giving you a variety of ways and shapes and approaches to create a solution that ultimately will have an impact on those who you coach. And ideally, right, we as coaches want to have as positive and beneficial impact as possible. So yeah, if you haven't joined, join. Trust me, it's worth its weight in gold and then some.
There you go. You heard it from the man himself. So take a look. Thanks for having the conversation. We appreciate everyone listening. And until next time, everybody, keep on coaching.